Welcome back to the High Existence Podcast. In this episode, alongside John Brooks, I'm delighted to interview Rashad Evans, former UFC light heavyweight champion. Rashad is a really, really interesting guy. And if you've never sort of explored the world of mixed martial arts, that's okay. But you can imagine the kind of courage it requires to participate in a sport like that. And so we covered all kinds of topics, but Rashad won the championship. He achieved a lifelong dream. We explored what that felt like. Did it feel how you would expect? How do you actually process that? And what do you do after you sort of reach the pinnacle? We also talked about his retirement and his transition out of the sport for so long. This had been defining to him. So how did he navigate through the process of sort of shifting into that next chapter of his life? Without succumbing to a sort of identity crisis? How do you navigate that? And so I recently heard Rashad's path described as starting with separating people from consciousness in his fight career to now bringing people back to it in his post-fight career, because he's spending time investigating the potential benefits of psychedelics, advocating for their therapeutic use through organizations like Unlimited Sciences. And he's also started his own functional mushroom company that's dedicated to helping people unearth their potential and bring health and wellness back into their own hands. So there's a lot of interesting material that we cover. I hope that you enjoy it. So let's dive in. Rashad, I look at the photos during your UFC title reign, and there's a fierceness that I can see in your eyes. When I look at the sort of photos of more present times, I see a lot of joy and a lot of levity and lightness. Now, of course, that might just be the context. You're about to, you know, brawl with someone. So, of course, that's going to draw out a fierceness. But I also wonder if you have experienced a sort of internal shift from those sort of championship fighting days to now, you know, living the life that you're living outside of active competition, if you feel an internal shift where something happened along the lines.
Yeah, you know, a lot of it is context, but also a lot of it is the mental shift. You know, like I feel within the last few years of just kind of on the journey I've been on, just, you know, getting connected with myself outside of the fighting landscape and understanding myself outside of the whole fighting aspect. I have softened myself up a bit, and not in a bad way. You know, I just kind of feel as if like life has kind of brought me on a different direction, and a lot of the hardness that I had, you know, in me that made me, what brought me to fighting, I kind of worked through. You know, fighting was like my therapy for a lot of the issues that I had that would kind of even bring that out of me. You know, I use a lot of, you know, pain in my life and things that upset me in my life as fuel, you know, as you know, something that I was fighting through. But the more I fought, the more I made peace with a lot of different things in my life. And after a while, I just kind of felt that I just didn't have that reservoir of pain that I had before.
So without that reservoir of pain, there wasn't the that sort of charged up fuel source that you could use. I wonder, were there any particular practices that you used to create the softening, as you described it?
You know, there was, you know, I was heavy on the plant medicine. The plant medicine was probably the biggest, you know, the biggest thing that helped me to gain perspective and really break through a lot of different aspects of myself, you know. And once I got those perspectives of myself, it kind of helped, you know, resolve whatever, you know, internal pain that I had that I didn't really get, you know, resolved through fighting. So it was a combination of fighting and a combination of just using a plant medicine to get perspective on my life and things that happened in my life that really got me to see life differently. And through, you know, through seeing life differently through my journeys with plant medicine, it's hard for me to carry that same feeling in life, because I know something that I didn't know before.
Right. And, you know, I've seen that you're advocating for, you know, responsible psychedelic use and research, the stuff, the partnerships you struck up with Unlimited Sciences and things like that. Do you think psychedelics offer a unique
invitation for people who are in the fighting world? Is it, do fighters uniquely stand to benefit from psychedelics, or are you just happy for, you know, everyone in the world who could use it to sort of take advantage of it?
Well, I think that fighters definitely can stand to benefit from using something like plant medicine in psychedelics. But I do feel like fighters in particular, you know, it's a great tool to help out because, you know, we have so much going on inside of us that bring us to fighting in the first place. You know, a lot of us, you know, have a lot of pain that we're working through in different aspects of life prior to fighting. So, you know, fighting is just an outlet to help us get rid of some of that pain that we have inside. But also, like, you know, in the journey of fighting, the ups and downs of fighting, you're only as good as your last fight. And sometimes you lose these fights. And when you lose these fights, you know, what are you left with? You know, there's a feeling of just an anguish. You know what I'm saying? Like, you just feel like, you know, you ain't shit. You know what I'm saying? And working past that and working through the psychological ups and downs of what the results of a fight can bring, it makes a huge difference as far as, you know, when you're able to use psychedelics to gain the perspective that you need to in order for you to get the right mindset in order to do it again. Because it's very hard. You know, sometimes, you know, for the most part, you find yourself fighting against yourself and really not knowing it. You know, it's one thing to have your opponent fighting against you, but it's another thing to fighting against yourself in a different kind of way. But when you're able to use the psychedelics and able to get the proper perspective, you're able to kind of funnel that energy into the right direction so you can have the best performance.
Yeah. On that note of fighting yourself versus fighting someone in front of you, someone who is, you know, a trained fighter, obviously they're preparing their whole life to defeat the opponent that's placed in front of them. And in my experience, when you play with plant medicines, you face an opponent, maybe an inner demon or something, that you can't just easily defeat with skills that you've learned in a gym. And I just remember thinking, like, I'm not tough at all. Like, the first time I had a proper plant medicine experience at all. But the fact that I've actually attempted this and gone into these places, in some sense, I felt tougher after I'd been through that. I'm wondering if you can speak to that, the difference between fighting things externally versus facing your inner demons and the difference that you found between those two things.
Yeah, when you fight things externally, you know, there's usually a time where, you know, you're gonna be able to, you know when you're gonna stop, right? You're gonna know when it's going to end. But when you're fighting something internally, the pain is not knowing when it's gonna stop. You know, you don't know when you're gonna stop having that feeling. You don't know what it's gonna take for you to get over that internal conflict that you have. And sometimes that internal conflict, it has a way of manifesting in ways that you don't even see. And you have these behavioral patterns that are very cyclical, and you really can't even, you know, get a grip or even understand how to even face that internal problem that you have, just because of the fact that the fight is so intense on the inside. And it's a fight that you got to have stamina for, and that you don't always want to do sometimes. Sometimes you wake up and you're just like, dang, I don't want to go through this again. I don't want to go through it. But you can't get away from yourself. You know what I'm saying? That's what my mom always tell me. You better learn to love yourself, because there's no getting out of it. You know what I'm saying? There's no way of getting out of dealing with yourself. So finding a way to deal with yourself and not be afraid of not knowing when it's going to stop is part of being able to take really control of that internal environment and really transmute it into something else, transmute it into an energy source that's going to benefit you in a productive kind of way versus a destructive kind of way. And that's what my journey has been about, is trying to find a way to transmute that inner conflict that I have and really make it into something that I can use on the outside of my life.
Rashad, I wonder, sometimes I hear people who go on to accomplish great things. They talk about how earlier in their life, they felt like they were destined for greatness. They had the story in their heads that I'm going to do something significant. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to make this happen. I wonder if that matches for you and your experience when you were younger, you know, but in the early days of your career, even before you started and became a professional fighter, did you have that sort of narrative going on in your head? Did you feel like you were destined for greatness?
I did, man. From a young age, you know, when I was wrestling in high school, even, you know, the team practice was from 3 to 6. And when I got done from team practice, I would go home, put my running shoes on, and I'll run for like another hour. And that hour, I'll put the my favorite music on, and I would just kind of fantasize about me just, you know, having a crowd cheering, me accomplishing these great things, and people, you know, want to take pictures with me. And I would just run, and I would just think about it. And I'll be like, man, that's kind of corny that I do that. But it was one of my favorite things to do. It was like part of my meditation, you know. And then when I started to, you know, go to college, I would still do the same thing. And when I first started up my career in mixed martial arts, I was working at the hospital. And I would work the graveyard shift, and I'll get off at 7 in the morning. And when I got off the graveyard shift, the first thing I'll do is I'll run or get a workout in right before I went to sleep. And when I went on my runs, there was this hill that I would run up and down, and I'll race my dog up this hill. And the whole time I'm running up this hill racing my dog, I would just say to myself, I'm going to be the best. I'm going to be the champion. I'm going to be world champion. I'm the best. And I'm going to be in the UFC. And I would say all these things over and over and over again. And it's crazy because everything that I said, it ended up happening. And it was kind of mind boggling because I'm sitting in Hawaii one day, you know, when I was world champion, and I'm like, dude, this is that feeling that I was resonating with when I was doing the run, because it wasn't so much of an image in my mind, because I just knew a feeling, and I was feeling that feeling that when I was on the beach in Hawaii, that was a feeling that I was having in my chest when I was running up the hill, when I was manifesting what I was going to do with my life.
Makes me want to ask about that night, because you were working for years and years to bring this dream to reality, you know, and you reached the top of the mountain. You do it. You did the thing that you were setting out to do. What was that like after, you know, all the cameras were away, the spotlight was off, you're out of the octagon, that night sitting there with the belt? Did it feel like how you expected it to feel? What was going through your mind when you're basking in the realization of that longstanding dream?
It felt nothing like how I thought it was going to feel, but at the same time, it felt even better. You know, it felt even better than I thought I was going to feel, because I thought, like, you know, when I got there, I'll be like, you know, so emotional, I wouldn't be able to really, you know, speak or something like that. But it was something different inside of me. It was something like, it was a fullness. It was a gratitude. It was a high that I was so emotionally high. I was feeling so full and so content. Normally after every single fight, I eat, I'll have some drinks, and I'll celebrate, you know, with my family and friends. But after I won the belt, I wasn't even hungry. I didn't want to drink any alcohol. I didn't want to, you know, do anything to mess up my mindset, because I was just so happy and I was so content. I didn't need anything. And it was a fullness that I never had before. It was a feeling of accomplishment that I never had before. It was as if, like, I could finally just, you know, sigh and breathe and say, man, I did that shit. I'm the best in the world right now. Like, I am the best, you know? And it was like, oh my gosh, you know, it was something I never could imagine. But at the same time, I hoped it would be, but I never could imagine that feeling.
Wow. This makes me really curious about, you know, it's like so clear from everything that you're describing, just how strong of a vehicle for meaning this was for you, right? And what happened when you decided to eventually step away from the sport, did you go through anything that would look like a sort of crisis of identity, or did it feel pretty sort of seamless in transition?
No, I went through a crisis of identity big time. Like I lost, you know, myself for a while, and it felt as if like I didn't know where to really plug the holes up in a boat. You know what I'm saying? I knew I was taking in a lot of water. I was losing fights. But even before I was even losing fights, there was a sense of feeling about fighting that I lost. And I tried to fake it for a long time, but I just couldn't fake it anymore. There was something truly different, and I really couldn't put my mind on what changed. And the catalyst of it all was me getting a peek of what life was going to be like once the camera stopped. You know, once the spotlight moved, you know, once I was hurt, I had to really, you know, face a lot of things that I never really faced before. You know, I had a divorce, and I was so busy during the time I was divorced, I didn't really have a chance to process it. And, you know, dealing with that and the collateral damage that came with that, you know, not being able to be there every single morning with my two children that I had with my ex-wife, you know, those were the things that kind of came to surface. And along with that, you know, a lot of different, you know, things that I didn't even, you know, foresee started to come to the surface. So I was asking myself a lot of questions like, who am I? You know, what was this all about? And that inquiry, you know, really lasted a few years until I was able to really sit down and seriously ask myself the question without trying to find a way to put a Band-Aid over it and just move on. And once I stopped trying to put a Band-Aid over it to move on and started to really, you know, be cognizant and really wanting to get an answer, then I started to ask the right questions, and then I started to move in a direction that allowed me to develop into more of myself outside of Sugar Rashad Evans.
Yeah, I can imagine, you know, being swept up in the fight game, there's always something to put your attention on. It's the next fight, you know, your training camp, you're working on your skills, you're trying to improve, and there's this thing that you're pursuing, there's a goal that you have in mind, and that kind of keeps the attention fixated on certain things.
Right.
And the other stuff in the sort of the side view can easily fall by the wayside. So it sounds like when you stepped away, there was like, I was just feeling a sense of the speed, the pace of life slowed down enough where you could begin to ask these questions you were never able to really have the space and the time to seriously investigate before.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I used to say that, you know, at one point, fighting was my entire life and everything else was on a back burner. But then once I started to, you know, have that separation from fighting, the rest of my life became the focus and fighting went on the back burner. And it's like, you can't dance at two weddings, you know, when it comes to being that high athlete as a fighter. You know, you have to really decide on, you know, where you're going to put the focus on. If you're going to be in the upper 1%, you know, those guys that are just, you know, legendary, there's a lot of sacrifice that comes with it. And a big sacrifice is some things in your personal life. And that was a toll that I was willing to pay. But at some point, that toll became way too much. And I couldn't pay it anymore. And it was just me being in denial for the longest time about me still being willing to pay it, even though I really couldn't, because emotionally it just wasn't there anymore.
Right. And it just, well, it's like, who are you if you don't want that?
Right.
Because you, for so long, that is what you've wanted. And then so your whole entire life is organized around that principle of reaching greatness in mixed martial arts. And so wait, it's like the sit of emptiness. When you put that down, now your hands are sort of empty.
Yeah.
So what do you put in that? What do you then next grab onto? And that makes me curious about, you know, for all these years, you were chasing a world title, you know, that you had your sights set on it. You're affirming it when you're going on these runs. You're just investing your heart and soul and mind into this dream that you realized. and now you've stepped away, no longer in active competition. You're still sort of, you know, you're an analyst. So you're still like in the fighting world, but it makes me curious about, you know, what's that sort of next championship, so to speak, that Rashad Evans has his sights set on? You know, what in this sort of next chapter of your life, what is it that you really feel yourself focusing on and committed to?
You know, I've been really finding fulfillment and bringing light to others. You know, by that I mean, you know, sharing my story, sharing my struggles, and really, you know, trying to be a reflection for those who really need it, you know. And it's one of those things that resonates with who I am. I'm the kind of guy who have, you know, done so much in the sport. It's not even just like what I accomplished as an athlete, but outside of that, you know, I built a team. Not only did I build a team, I took so many people from, you know, from all over the world, and I brought them to this gym and together, and you know, they changed their lives. You know, they changed their lives. You know, Kamaru Usman, you know, is now a world champion. You know, he was somebody that lived with me for the longest time. And it wasn't about, oh yeah, one day he's going to be world champion, he's going to be able to do this for me. It was just, it was love. It was me being like, yo, you know what? I want to be the kind of guy who I wish I had. And I was very lucky in my career to have people look out for me, but I wanted to be able to do what the extra mile. I wanted to really truly give people the absolute best that I could give them. And that was giving them a part of me. And I was giving them something that, you know, for the rest of their lives, they're going to be able to, you know, hold their head up high and feel like they have accomplished something because of something that I helped them achieve. So for me, my fulfillment is truly helping other people out. And that was something that that was kind of highlighted towards me when I went through my rough time. Because when I went through my rough time, I was like, damn, where's all the people that I helped out, you know? And, you know, because I had to go through it alone. But then I realized that it doesn't matter where they are, because what I did for them, I did for them. It wasn't me doing it for me. It wasn't me doing it so they can, you know, one day reciprocate it to me. It was me doing it because I wanted to do it. And that is the true sense of giving. The true sense of giving is giving without ever expecting anything in return. And if I was truly a given person, then I can't expect anything from anybody else. So for me, I was like, that's who I am. And I would do it all over again. And it made me happy knowing that at the end of it all, no matter, you know, how I came out on the other end, I would still not change the person who I am.
You were talking about after your fighting career came to an end, you felt like you didn't necessarily know what to do next. You didn't have that clear sense of purpose, like, oh, I know exactly what I'm meant to do. You felt like you'd lost yourself a little bit. And I guess, like, to be a really good fighter, you need to be somewhat ruthless and cold and turn off those, like, softer emotions, right? And now, like, you're there and you're kind of living a more normal life, and you want to cultivate deeper, more intimate relationships. And so, like, those emotions come back on and it can be confusing. But the fortunate aspect of your story is that at least you did have that initial vision. Like, you did achieve greatness, you know, in your younger years. And so many people never have that, right? So many people, they're like, I don't even know what I'm good at. I don't know what my purpose is. I don't know where I'm going. And we see this a lot. And, you know, people feel like, I'm meant to be doing something, but I don't know what. And what would you say to someone who came to you and was asking you, like, how do I figure that out?
You know, the biggest thing I'll say is just being able to ask yourself that question without being afraid. You know, I feel like a lot of times people have in their mind of what they think that it should be. And then when they ask the question, they're expecting to get a certain answer. And when that answer doesn't come to them, then they feel like they haven't got an answer at all. But, you know, the biggest thing is just being able to just be honest enough with yourself and ask the right question in order to, you know, in order to face that fear, in order to face the fact that, yeah, I'm meant to be doing something, but I don't know what it is. And that's okay. You know, because what I tell my nephews is this right here, you know, they train to fight, right? And I say, you know what? I don't know what, if you're going to fight and be at the highest level, I don't know what your career can be. I don't know what your ceiling's going to be, but I will tell you this. If you really love this and you love to pursue this and this is your passion of yours, then one passion will feed another. You know, if you learn to live from the heart, it'd be easy to recognize when something else moves you from the heart. And I feel like a lot of people are so disconnected from their heart's journey that it becomes such a task in order to really tap into that space that allows you to feel like you're in the right direction. So I would tell them, I say, hey, ask yourself the right question. And then if you're still not getting any answers, fully give yourself into something that you're passionate into. Whatever you're passionate about in life, whether it's drawn or whatever it may be, give yourself fully to that passion. And giving yourself fully to one passion will help you find another passion.
I love that. Rashad, I can't help but notice the, might be a painting, it could be a photograph though, of Muhammad Ali behind you.
Yeah.
Was he someone who was very inspiring to you when you were starting out in your sort of journey into the combat sports world?
Absolutely. I used to watch all of Ali fights. I would sit in my security vehicle when I was working at the hospital and watch, you know, him and Joe Frazier, and just really, you know, get in the mind of Ali, you know, all his trash talking, you know, his political stance and really truly what it meant to be that person in a time where, you know, it wasn't popular to be. You know, Ali faced a lot during his time, that was against the status quo of what that today's climate was. And to be able to be brave enough to face that, for me, that truly meant more to me in a sense than is fighting, you know, because not saying that fighting is easy, but it's a lot harder to do when you're tying everything else and every other aspect into your personal life into what you do. You know, the whole political aspect and being a guy to stand out against a lot of things that we now know, you know, wasn't the right call. But to be the first one to stand your ground and do that, that's a legend right there.
Yeah, as you were talking about, you're going on these runs after your shift. That confidence, just the extreme confidence, felt like it gave me these sort of Ali vibes looking back at the old interviews that he used to do. And I was wondering if there was some of that sort of transference, seeing him, you know, exude that, and you could like sort of borrow that and generate that for yourself and bring that same kind of energy. Are there other figures that you found really inspiring? Maybe authors, filmmakers, anybody that might be kind of surprising for people to know that, oh, that was somebody who was influential to you. That person, you really enjoyed their way of thinking or anything, anybody like that that comes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was always a big fan of Mike Tyson. I used to watch him, as a fighter, and even, you know, as an intellectual, Mike was real smart back in the day. But I would say Jiddu Krishnamurti was a guy who I was really a big fan of. Big fan of his mindset. Big fan of just, you know, what he was really trying to get at. You know, really what he was trying to get people to see. You know, at just like his big thing was like, discovering what is, you know, that what is aspect of ourselves, that true essence of self and what we are, you know. So that's what I would try to always, you know, I'll read his books, I'll try to devour any information that I can, so that that way I'll be able to, you know, have a glimpse of just kind of, you know, the depth that I needed to reach inside of myself. And he was a great philosopher that I love to listen to.
Yeah. So with Krishnamurti, he talks a lot about like not harming other people. Like even if he was kind of confronted or someone was like harmful towards him, kind of being the peaceful one.
Yeah.
I'm wondering how you see that now. Like, if someone kind of confronted you, knowing that you have the skills to defend yourself, would you kind of, would there be like an internal conflict as to what to do? And I'm just wondering, like, how you would see that now, maybe compared to, like, you know, back when you were fighting.
Well, see, at the time I was reading Christian Rudy, I was working at the hospital as a security guard. And my biggest thing as being a security guard was in the hospital, there's so many people coming in there with just the most devastating news that they're probably facing their lifetime. And some of the joys being, you know, having a baby, but you have all these mixtures of emotions, and you really never knew what emotional temperature you'll reach once you got to a scene of any kind of situation. So I would always try to just disarm people, you know? So my style is the fact that if somebody comes up to me acting reckless, I give them a chance. I disarm them because, you know, I don't know what they got going on. You know, I don't know what just happened in their life. So I give them a chance and I disarm them with just kind of like, you know, find a way to just kind of make it be cool or, you know, kind of, you know, smooth things out. But if it got to the point where I couldn't, then, you know, I would have to handle business. But I was always looking to try to go for the peace first, because it's easy to get into that situation, but it takes a much more patience and a much more disciplined mind in order to be like, let me take a step back. And let me just truly, you know, take my ego out of this and just allow myself to really give this person a chance to just work through whatever shit they got going on.
I wonder, Rashad, if there was ever a particular technique, a certain kind of strike or submission or something that you really wish you could have executed during your fighting days that you never got a chance to pull off?
You know, My favorite submission is an arm triangle, and I hit it all the time without any hesitation. I catch everybody with it, but I was never able to finish a fight in it. And it's like, I don't even know how it never happened, but whenever I'm in a situation where I'm doing MMA or doing jiu-jitsu, I'm catching everybody in an arm triangle, and my arm triangle is nasty, but I never caught anybody in a fight. So that was the one technique that I wish I was able to pull off in a fight.
John, were you ever able to execute an arm triangle in a jiu-jitsu competition?
No, I haven't. I've been caught in quite a few arm triangles in training, but not my best submission. Yeah, that's interesting, right? Though. Yeah, I guess it's because, like, in competition, you're so connected to that kind of primal state that in the moment, you don't really care if you get an arm triangle. Right. Like, after the fact, it's like, oh, I wish I would have done that, right?
Yeah.
Like, in the moment, it's like, it's irrelevant.
Yeah, like, for me, like, whenever I got somebody down on the ground, my mindset immediately went to ground and pound rather than jiu-jitsu, you know? And with a Greg Jackson being my head coach, his martial arts was Gaidu Jitsu, and that's jiu-jitsu, but it was more like with an emphasis. You know, we learned a lot of ground and pound. So ground and pound was our everything, and we just worked that to the bone. So whenever I got somebody down to the ground, ground and pound came out instead of working a jiu-jitsu technique.
I'm curious, Rashad. I want to ask this question about rituals, and then also hear about some of the projects that you're working on, you know, these days, you know, what kind of takes up your time and attention. But I'm curious, you know, especially during those days when you were training for the championship, were there any kind of odd rituals or habits that you found yourself doing that you used to really kind of keep yourself focused and centered? You mentioned when you were running, you were doing these sort of affirmations and really tuning into the feeling. Was there anything else, you know, unusual or out of the ordinary that you were doing that you, looking back, credit to contributing to some degree to your success?
Well, I would have to eat sweet potatoes. That was like the, I would have like on fight day, I would only eat sweet potatoes. That's the only thing I would eat is sweet potatoes. And on fight day also, like, I had like this routine that I would do for me to get ready for a fight. Like, I couldn't go into the fight just funky and smelling any kind of way. I had to take a shower. I had to really take my time. It took me like about 2.5 hours to get ready to go to the cage and to even just for them to come and pick us up, because they come and pick you up. And then once they pick you up, you go and you do the whole lights, camera, action, showtime biz. But up until then, you're pretty much waiting in your room, which is purgatory. So what I would do is for like the last 2 hours, instead of sitting there thinking like your mind tends to do when you got a fight like that, a huge fight in your mind, you know, I would use that time and just get fresh. And I'll get fresh to death. I'll shave up. I'll shower up real good. I'll, you know, cut my nails, cut my toenails, make sure I was just really, really clean. And when I felt clean, it allowed me to just, you know, it allowed sugar to come out. It allowed this persona to come out that was just like all smooth. You know what I'm saying? Like super smooth, super slick, almost like a pimp with it. You know what I'm saying? Like I had to get into character, and get into character was just me just like being absolutely just clean as I can before I left the room. And, you know, that's not something that all fighters do, because I fought some fighters and they stank to high hell. And I'm just like, there's no way you could have bathed within the last week, because there's no reason you should smell this bad.
That's part of their strategy.
For real, man. Off, I guess. For real. Yeah. One time I fought somebody and they smelled so bad. Like I remember gagging in a certain like clinch position. And then at one point it stained me. It was like, it's like I started to smell like it. It was a terrible, terrible thing. Like I couldn't wash the smell off me. It was the worst thing ever, man. I still remember that smell. I'm like, gosh, that is terrible.
Oh man. That's one of the things I've never thought about, you know, watching MMA, mm-hmm. you know, on TV. Yeah. I guess you get some pretty, pretty funky stenches happening in that octagon. And I think that's such an interesting, you know, that sort of ritual of cleaning, like the cleanliness and the sort of very methodical approach, creating this space to step into your alter ego, you know, is like, that's a real thing. And, you know, I'm thinking about when I put on like a new suit for yeah. the first time and you're walking around and it's like, how you, like those things matter. They do something. They support in creating these sort of, you know, shifts in consciousness. So I think that's really cool that you use that as like a venue for sugar to come out. And you must be excited. Thanksgiving's coming up. You're going to have, you know, plenty of sweet potatoes. Sure.
Sweet potato pie, everything sweet potato. So yeah, I'm excited about it. And listen, Thanksgiving is something I don't take lightly, because there's a lot of Thanksgivings that I had to miss because I had to cut weight and I had a fight coming up. So every single time it's Thanksgiving, I make sure I eat my healthy portion, because there's one time where I would just sit there and watch on TV or just watch people eat and just be like, oh my God. So you're not going to finish that? Like, you know how like you watching somebody eat some food on TV and then you watch them just take a bite and then they just put it down. They start doing a dialogue and you're like, damn, you just not even going to finish eating the rest of that. Like when you cut weight, that's what you see, you know? So I'm just like, you know what? I'm never taking food for granted.
What a sacrifice you made. Well, I hope you, you know, yeah, get double servings. And I want to ask you about, you know, there's two main projects that I'm aware of that you're working on. Maybe there's some more, and feel free to bring up those as well. But there's an NFT project called Metatodes. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is, what the focus is
there? Yeah, Metatodes Gang is a NFT that I started. I drew the Metatodes Gang. I drew the original one, and then I work with some people to kind of digitize the art and make it so it can go on the platform. But, you know, this project came to me as kind of a story, you know, out of the journey that I've been on the last 4 years since I stopped fighting. You know, when I started to go into the next phase of my life, I went and consulted the TOAD, which is 5-MeO-DMT. And at the time, I didn't know if I wanted to retire or what I wanted to do, but I went and I seen the TOAD. And upon that, I had a crazy life-changing experience that offered me a chance to see a lot of things in life that I wasn't seeing before. And also it gave me perspective in ways that I really can't, you know, I wasn't able to do myself. Like, for instance, like, I stopped drinking alcohol. I stopped doing like a lot of things that just no longer serve me anymore, you know, stop eating meat over a period of time. And I just really started to just like more gravitate towards things that just were beneficial to me and leave out the things that were not beneficial to me. And it just kind of was like, it just fell away from me. It wasn't something that I had tried to do. It wasn't anything that I was, hoping to do. It was just something that just kind of happened. And with that experience, you know, the last 4 years, it took me through a lot. You know, it took me through, you know, being depressed and working through depression and working on this transition, which is the next phase of my life, you know. And it helped me to find a way to transition and transmute a lot of those negative, dark energy that I had into, you know, positivity, into, you know, a version of myself that I never seen. So when it came to me, like my friend told me about the NFT project and stuff like that, and I was like, okay, that's cool. But when I started to really learn about it, I really was like, oh, that's really cool. So I started to draw my NFT. And when I started to draw the toad, it just came to me. And I'm like, man, there's so many people that have gone through a transition like I have, or just had that, you know, that moment in their life where they're not knowing what they're going to do next. And they're working through the depression of it all. And they're working through a lot of things that I was dealing with. So I wanted to have a project that was dedicated to that, that was really dedicated to really, you know, getting people to see the interconnectedness in which we all have. And truly, that's why I chose the toad, is because, see, we all are the toad. And that's something that I really figured out once I was on the medicine, the fact that there's a fabric in each and every single one of us that we share that is so close, that is so intimate, that we can't even believe it with our everyday waking mind, with our conscious mind. It's not something that we even can even foresee right now with the way that we see life right now, you know? But there's a peace in us and there's a space in us that connects us all. And that's truly what the Toad Project is about. It is really getting people to see the interconnectedness that we all have and getting us to see that whatever problem that we go through, we don't got to go through it alone, because there's no problem that you have that I really haven't experienced something like that. So we have such a similarity in the things that we've experienced and shared in our life, and being able to set up a community that really is, you know, geared towards that was my main goal with the Toad Project. So the Toad Project has a call for justice a plan in it to, you know, give back some of the proceeds to, you know, mental health awareness, you know, and also, you know, with that, you know, Unlimited Sciences is one of the charities in which we're going to give to with my NFT to help, you know, fund psychedelic research that is meant to, you know, for mental health. And it is something that I've been having a lot of fun doing. You know, we went and we did something a couple UFCs ago in Utah. And I, you know, brought some people who bought the toad. I brought them out to Utah and we, you know, had a great time at the UFC event. Went to the UFC event, went to Joe Rogan concert. We went to the club. We just had a great weekend experience. But, you know, one of my utilities, the fact that, you know, we have real life utility where I, you know, they get to know me. And eventually one of these days, you know, potentially we all get a chance to sit in circle together.
That's awesome. Yeah. I love the emphasis. Like it's cool artwork and there's symbolism behind the artwork, but it's a community, you know, yeah. There's like you creating a space for people to know that they're not alone and going through these really difficult sort of transitions and you know, rough patches and whatever kind of sort of version of mental health struggle that people go through, a lot of times people don't have venues to talk about these things. So when they see someone like you who has this, you know, aura of being the baddest man on the planet, like you were a UFC champion, like tough guy, able to talk and open up about these things, that kind of can sort of dislodge and disarm the sort of falsehoods around what masculinity means. Mm-hmm. When that space is sort of opened up. So I think that's really, really beautiful and awesome, awesome thing to pursue. And I also want to know about, Umbo. So this cool project, you mentioned Unlimited Sciences is a nonprofit advancing psychedelic research. And so Del Jolly, who we both know, and Jake Plummer, former NFL quarterback of the Denver Broncos and Arizona Cardinals, right? I'm not a football fan, so I forget. But you guys sort of joined forces to create this new project. Can you tell us what's going on with Umbo, what that is?
Yeah, you know, with Umbo, you know, we decided to make Umbo. And, you know, one thing with the Umbo project is the fact that Jake, myself, and Dell, you know, we've been touched by mushrooms. We really love mushrooms, and mushrooms have done tremendous for me when it comes to being able to gain, you know, back a lot of the things that I felt like I was once losing. You know, functional mushrooms is something that was part of my journey, and the benefits that I felt from functional mushrooms, from a neurological aspect and from a health benefit aspect, has been tremendous. You know, when I was fighting in the UFC, when I was going to get a license for New York City, they almost told me that I would never fight again. And they said, because I had, something come back on my MRI saying that, you know, I had a really bad frontal lobe injury to my brain. So I was really concerned about that. And I looked into ways that I can heal my brain once I, you know, once I retired. So once I started to, you know, dive into the aspect of just what I could do, I learned about functional mushrooms. I learned about, you know, the magic mushroom, and I started on a regimen, and that regimen completely changed my whole health, you know, from a huge neurological standpoint where, you know, I felt as if like before I would try to compete and I would try to do what I could do before, but I would see the openings, but I just wasn't fast enough or just didn't have the reaction time to get there. But once I started to use the functional mushrooms in conjunction with the psilocybin, I started to notice some huge changes in my body. I started to notice huge changes in my ability to function. So when it came to, you know, setting up Umbo, Dell, myself, and Jake, we really wanted to make an impact. And Dell had his own, Jake had his own battle when it comes to neurological health and concussions and things like that, being an athlete as a, you know, one of the badasses, one of the best quarterbacks, you know. So he really resonated, and he really, you know, really understood what the mushrooms had did for him. So when it came to trying to have something that really could help people in a big way, we came up with mushrooms. And functional mushrooms, to me, is one of the best ways to really help when it comes to what we call old age. And what we call old age is nothing but, you know, neuropathy. As we get older, the toxins from the food that we eat and just our environment, it starts to really incumbent on our physical body, you know, and you see it manifest in ways of Alzheimer's and all kinds of neurological diseases. But when it comes to treating neurological diseases in a neurological body, there isn't a lot of pharmaceuticals that can help you out in such a dramatic way, because whatever pharmaceuticals they do have, they have these binding agents, and these binding agents is really what causes the convolution on a neurological body. So with the functional mushrooms, you know, it rebuilds the neurological health. And we're just even in the beginning stages of understanding what mushrooms can do. So to be on the forefront of something like mushrooms and to know what it done for me, it was all I needed to know that as far as like getting involved in a space, because I truly believe that mushrooms are going to be that thing in the future that completely changed people's lives. And, you know, we have more and more neurological problems people are coming down with in the last few years. And I believe that getting people back their health on a neurological level, mushrooms will play a big part in that.
I love that. Yeah, it's such an emerging world. I think Paul Stamets, his interview with Joe Rogan all those years ago where he first started talking about lion's mane.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people just don't realize that there's so many mushrooms out there. It's just they're just not very well educated. But then you have these projects like Fantastic Fungi come out and just shows people this sort of magical world. I've heard Jake call it the queendom of mushrooms. I think that's, there's a lot to be explored. And I also think it's interesting the connectivities of these perfectly legal mushrooms that don't make you trip, but have these pronounced health benefits that can support and sort of become a vehicle for furthering the therapeutic use of psychedelic mushrooms and psilocybin and stuff like that. That connection, that link, I think is pretty cool. Just kind of getting people to sort of shake away this sort of mycophobia, this fear of mushrooms and all the propaganda that was put in their heads from, you know, however many years ago. So,
like you said, you know, it's a lot of breaking through that mycophobia and really getting people to, you know, just try the mushroom and really try to understand it. Because even when I tell people right now that I have a mushroom company, they're like, yeah, they think it's a funny mushroom. But I'm like, no. I mean, you know, I have some of those too, but this is not what this conversation is about. This conversation is about the functional mushroom, right? That I try to tell them, like, you know, functional mushrooms, you know, they have tremendous benefits for your body. And as Dell always says, you know, he says, you know, functional mushrooms have as much, if not more, benefit to the body as, you know, the psychedelic ones. And I felt that for the most part, you know, lion's mane for the cognitive function, cordyceps for the respiratory health, you know, turkey tail for the gut health, reishi for the overall body health. And you start putting these mushrooms together, you know, you start to feel the difference. You start to feel, you know, better sleep. You know, right now with Umbo, I'm taking the stack that we have, the Michael Rise and the Michael Rest, and my sleep has never been better. And there was a point in my time where I kind of stopped dreaming, and it was kind of like, wow, you know, I just go to sleep and I wake up and, you know, very uneventful night, you know, even though I would feel rested, but I didn't really realize that how much I really wasn't resting. Once I started to take the Michael Rise and the Michael Rest, and I really started to get on that, my dreams have gotten so much more vivid. But even outside of that, like I'm waking up at like, you know, 5:30, 6 in the morning, feeling super recharged, like, yo, I'm ready to go for my day. And it's just that I feel like my body is finally getting to that next stage of REM sleep that maybe I was missing before. And these mushrooms are amazing. And you know what? Here's the thing. Like, I want people at home, whoever listening to this podcast, to try it. So if you try it, you can go to getumbo.com. And then when you type in HEX15, you'll get 15% off of whatever you order. And just try it out, give it a chance, and, you know, understand the fact that, you know, it's going to take maybe, you know, a few months in order to start really truly feeling the benefits, because these are adaptogens, and these adaptogens, they react different to everybody depending on what your body's lacking. And sometimes, you know, we have a lot of different things in our bodies, different kind of toxins in there, and it may take a while to work through that. So you can't be like, oh, I tried it one time, it didn't work for me. The continued use of it over a period of time is what really makes the biggest difference in it. And with that discount, you can definitely, you know, go there more than one time and give it a try.
I love that. I've taken lion's mane, and I've experienced something similar with the vividness of the dreams. I wonder if there's been a lot of research on that. If not, they should be having some studies that investigate how lion's mane is, you know, what's going on there. Cause it's strange.
Yeah.
I usually don't, my dreams are just kind of like very vague and they sort of float away. But since taking the lion's mane, it's just something, there's a crispness to my dreams and I remember them.
Yeah.
And that's just sort of like a cool side effect. Cause I like lucid dreaming. I like those sort of the dream yoga practices and stuff like that is kind of a fun thing. But that's just a cool sort of added perk, you know, like another one of my friends, noticed better working memory. This is anecdotal, so I can't say point to the study, but he could just have like a visualization, like where everything in his house, like he could remember where things were so much more easily than before he was taking them. So I think there's so much research to be done because, you know, mycophobia for so long kind of kept people away from it. And maybe there's sort of pharmaceutical incentives to not, you know, these things are just growing out from the ground. So do we really want that to be the medicine, you know? But I'd be very curious to see where this whole space will be in 10 years time with the, you know, the research that is underway and will continue to get underway as this space becomes more popular.
I mean, I feel like it's going to explode. I mean, you know, we only barely know about 10% of what these mushrooms can do. And I feel like the more research we do, the more, you know, people using them and kind of telling these stories about what they're getting out of it, you know, the more it's going to grow in a way that, you know, helps and benefits everybody. So, you know, that's one of, you know, one of my hopes for Umbo, you know, and I feel like with Umbo, we're in the right direction and in the right path to really make an impact in people's lives.
I love that. And it makes me think, you know, maybe had you been taking these mushrooms back during your competing days, you would have been able to get that triangle.
I know. I'm telling you, man. You know, here's the thing. You know, I actually was able to see, because after I retired in 2018, I was on this vision quest. You know, I was, you know, rediscovering myself. And through rediscovering myself, I tapped back into training. I tapped back into fighting. I started training people. And then I realized I still had a little bit of something in the basement, you know, something was still in there. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to compete again. So, I tested myself and I got a chance to compete this past January in Eagle FC and Habib's, promotion. And, it was fantastic. It was fantastic because I hadn't felt that feeling in a long time. And then to feel it with my new mindset was just what was amazing. You know, it was amazing because, I had a lot of realizations in that moment. And it was just like, it was truly, like the happy ending that I wanted in the sport because, you know, I didn't end my UFC career the way I wanted to. I lost 5 fights in a row. And, to me, that was devastating. So I'm just like, dude, I can't go out like that. So the last fight I had, I went out there and competed, you know, amazing, and I won. And I was like, now I can walk away. But it was that very cerebral performance that you're talking about.
Beautiful. Yeah, just put a bow on it, you know. Just have that experience come back with that mindset that you had sort of cultivated through these plant medicines, through the deep inner work that you were doing, and then be able to go out and get that last W, you know, that's really awesome. And I'm happy that you were able to have that experience.
Yeah. Thank you, man. It was a long time coming, but it's something that, it was something that I needed, you know, something that I needed in a lot of different ways. And, it was something that allowed me to say goodbye and let go in a different kind of way, you know, because that's what the medicine has always been teaching me. You know, it was teaching me the fact that it's okay to let go. See, we live our lives and our whole mindset as a society is you gotta push, you gotta go, don't let go, hold on. You know, it's just this mindset when it comes to just never giving up or just never letting go. And what I found through my journey is it's actually the opposite. It's actually the opposite of holding on that allows you to move forward. Like every phase of our lives, that was one of the most difficult phases of our life. It was always about letting go, you know, and it seems as almost as if life has keeps showing us in each and every single phase that we go through that you got to let go. You got to let go. You got to let go. And as you truly embrace the plant medicine, you truly understand that in order for you to get where you need to be on a plant medicine journey, you got to let go. The harder you fight, the harder it's going to be. But when you learn to let go and truly just trust that you're going to be okay, a whole different experience emerges. And that's what I'm learning about life is like, it's okay to let go. And letting go has allowed me to be freer than anything else. Because there's a sense of peace once you let go. Because there's this trust in knowing that no matter what happens, you're going to be okay.
Yeah, this reminds me, John wrote this article, The Psychedelic Stoic, some years ago. It was about bringing ancient stoicism into the sort of difficult, you know, plant medicine experiences where some people might say, like, what do you do when you're having like a bad trip? You know, well, there's something for you to face. And having that ability to let go, I think is so important to, because people get sort of, they can get wound up on something, you know, where they can't get past it. So being able to have that disposition, I think also invites us into an ability to appreciate and savor life that is hard to access if we're too preoccupied with clinging and clutching on to the way things used to be or the way that we want them to be. So I think that's a beautiful message. Rashad, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us today. And, you know, rolling with the weird ups and downs of the internet. Really appreciate you jumping on and, sharing your wisdom with us.
No problem. I appreciate you, Mike, and I appreciate you, John. Thank you to all you listeners. I appreciate it and hope I was able to say something that resonated with your soul.
Awesome. I'm sure you did. Thanks, Rashad. Have an awesome time, and I'll be thinking about you on Thanksgiving when you're getting to have those sweet potatoes.
Absolutely. And guys, if you want to check me out, at Sugar Rashad Evans on Instagram and on Twitter. If you write to me, I will respond. So please fill me with all the questions you want, and I'll hit you back. Take care.
That's awesome. And we'll have all the links in the show notes that we mentioned on the podcast. So you guys can check out Rashad. You can check out Meditoes Gang and check out Umbo, all the good stuff that he's working on.